She was very pleased with that because it got very hard to get.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And she was telling what, a meeting down at the library?
Yes, yes. Talking through the Red Cross. It was a Red Cross Day, and the monthly meeting of the Red Cross, and she was a guest speaker and told us this little interesting things of the sitting
well,
on.
Well, here, when would this have been? After the Second World
after
War?
After the Second World War, just not when, long after, about, I suppose, 1946 or 7. Yes.
And Elizabeth were king and queen. Mm. Well, of course, they were. George VI was king during the Second World War.
And the Casey, where Mr. and Mrs. Richard Casey were something to do with the, in England, to, what would they be?
Well, I know he was appointed governor of India.
It was before he was governor of Bengal.
Bengal, yes.
Before that. But he was something to do with the Australian embassy in England or whatever.
He was probably our representative in
England. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and the little interesting part was the taking a little present, and the Queen was so pleased because silk stockings were very hard to get there, and they're very hard for anyone to get. I don't know whether...
I never thought you'd take the Queen a present.
No, well, the King said, my dear, she has brought you a present.
Oh, I think that's lovely.
Yes, he told us that.
Did you go to other meetings that she was ever a speaker?
No, I didn't go out very much. I couldn't get out. Somebody had kindly taken me there that day. I saw that.
Berwick was very small then. Did you know everybody who lived here?
Yes. We would see a stranger in the town and find out there was somebody staying with one of our friends.
Where they came from?
Yes, and all about them. And I even knew I could point out who owned which cow they were wandering about. And if we saw a dog in the street, we'd know the dog belonged to one of our friends or some acquaintance. Yes, it was a very small town.
What did the majority of the people who lived in the town do? Were they tradespeople? Was the bank manager and your father and the church people traders?
Yes, and after that there were retired people and a lot of elderly ladies, spinsters or widows.
How had they come here?
I don't know, but I think some of them came because Berwick was a pretty little town and they thought they'd like to end their days in Berwick.
And maybe not too expensive to buy a house.
No, and quiet and peaceful and nice fresh air and plenty of flowers and birds about. A very pleasant little town to end your days. When my father came and he stayed at the school 22 years and then stayed on here because he thought Berwick was so pretty and so nice. He'd like to end his days here and he did.
Yes, well, it was okay. Continuation, Miss Barker's residence on Saturday, May the 23rd. Correction, April the 23rd. We're now May the 7th, 1994. Miss Barker, what was Harkaway like when you were a girl? Did you go up often?
Not very often. It was a tiny little village with a post office and a school.
And who was the postmistress? Do you remember?
I don't know. There was a Mr. Mill. I don't know whether he was the postmaster. I have an idea he was.
And there was no shop?
No. I think the post office had a little wood cell, cigarettes and matches and candles and a few little odds and ends like that. Very, very scattered. A few houses and dwellings, and beautiful gum trees and heath in season and little wildflowers all the year round.
What did you go to Harkaway for? Visiting?
No, we went up to collect some heath. No, we didn't know anybody in Harkaway to visit. And we went up on a beautiful day to get heath. My pup followed us, had a great time in the heath and chased rabbits or imaginary rabbits, and coming home We came home down the hill and a motorcycle ran over him and killed him right beside. And then my father picked him up and put him over under those hawthorn hedge that's there. And I was very sad because, you know, he's a nice little dog. He wasn't a year old, he was only young.
A little fox terrier.
Little foxy, yeah. His name was Bob. And then all the children were sorry at school because he used to go over and play with them at playtime, and especially at lunchtime would get some of their lunch, which he'd sit up among them and eat all kinds of things, cakes and heaven knows what, which he wouldn't have eaten at home.
No. And what happened?
And then a lady took me up the next day, picked some flowers and put them over on his body. He was just lying on his side there under the tree. And I told a little boy called Alan Anderson, his father worked on the council, and he went up and buried him. And when he came back, he told this little boy to tell me that when he buried him, after he buried him, he put the flowers on top of his grave.
Yes.
And so that was kind, wasn't it?
Wasn't it kind?
Yes. And then somebody gave me a black and white half-grown kitten. It was Grace O'Sullivan, her name was, and that started me on all my cats. I had dozens and dozens of cats throughout the years, and I found cats were easier to mind when I couldn't take them, had to take them for walks.
How did you go up to Harkaway in your pony and trap?
No, we hadn't had the pony and trap then. My father pushed me, and I was a great fat lump, about 10, pushed me in a long pram I had. So it was quite an effort.
A long pram, so your legs would stay straight.
My legs straightened out on it.
That was quite some hill to push you up.
I know.
I bet he was pleased when you came downhill.
Yes. And no brake on the thing, I think probably,
yes, probably
ran down the hill. Yeah. That was quite an effort.
Did you go out, if you did go for picnics or go out and about, what sort of transport did you have? Did you get on?
We got a phaeton then, after we'd been in Berwick about 2 years. We had bought a very quiet pony, and then we bought a phaeton, a low buggy, the phaeton is. We bought it from the Sweeney's in Mary Warren.
Is that an easy buggy to
it's
step into?
It's easy for me to get into because it was low slung down and up just a low step and up then into the seat of the buggy. And we used to go for picnics and drive around, my cousin and I. My father really went with us because he thought it was...
Now that's recorded. Do the shopping in the phaeton?
Well, most things were delivered. Meat,
yes.
And the baker came round, the butcher came round twice a week, and the baker every day was bread, and the grocer would come and get an order once a week and deliver it that same afternoon. Weekly groceries was always between 15 shillings and a pound, and that included butter, bacon, sugar, flour, oats, other odds and ends.
Staple.
Yes.
What grocer would that have been?
Well, we used to alternate the dealings with Mr. Laveridge, Mr. Paternoster, and Mr. Meyer. Mr. Meyer had a little store opposite St. Margaret's, the grocer's shop.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what, did you give the...
Month about.
Ah.
And, yes, and that's what happened then. In those days, we didn't ever go to Dandenong because we never had a car and our pony was too old to go. People used to go to Dandenong and get a week's supply of things often and go on the day when they had the Dandenong market. But we never went regularly. We couldn't.
Tell me, when you were older, did you drive your phaeton yourself?
Yes, when I was older and I went to the girls' school, the last year I was there, I drove this very quiet pony and I could harness and unharness them myself.
And you'd take her down to school?
Yes.
And unharness her at school?
Yes, and there were paddocks around the school then.
This school you're talking about is now St. Margaret's.
It was Presbyterian Girls' School in
Mason. Yes.
Yes. And one of the headmistresses later used to call the pony Alice's sister Peggy.
And you just unharness her and tether her or just leave her in the paddock?
No, she'd walk around, and if I saw her and it was getting near time, was coming home, I'd just whistle up and put the blinkers on her, and she'd stand by the trap and wait for me.
Mm-hmm. She was very good, wasn't she?
Yes, and she used to, if too many people got in the trap, she used to stop at the hill and look round to see who was getting out. But she never asked me to get out. She knew I couldn't.
You know.
She never did. She never looked to see. She always stopped and looked right round.
And someone had to get out?
Yes. My cousin always got out and walked beside her, the trap, and I drove her up, and then my cousin would get in.
Once you got up to the hill?
Yeah, once you got to the top of the hill.
The top of the, she wasn't going to pull you,
no,
both of you.
No, not too many people she wasn't going to pull up. But she never asked me to get out when I was alone in the track. She never did. And I could drive myself around. I used to go around on Saturday morning, go around and do messages, and it was lovely.
And she'd wait for you always?
She'd wait for me. I'd get out of the trap outside a shop, and she'd look around and see if I got out and walked in, and she wouldn't move till I got back, and she said, get up, I'm in.
You were her charge, I think.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me, did you go to Beaconsfield at all?
Well, we used to go around down to Beaconsfield on to O'Neill's Road for picnics sometimes. And O'Neill's Road was a little narrow track with a lot of gum trees around it. And up, a little way up was what they call the eucalyptus factory. And it's on a tin notice on one of the saplings that said eucalyptus factory and pointed into the paddock, and a couple of sheds there.
You never went in?
No.
What happened if the road was narrow and you had to turn your phaeton? What happened then?
Well, it was very narrow and you couldn't do it. My cousin used to take the pony out and turn it around herself, because the pony would get very worried if she was used to turning in a chinker, which was a higher thing, and when she couldn't turn without the wheels getting underneath the chap, she'd get very worried and start backing. Very worried.
So you take the pony out of the...
Yeah.
And
turn
the, she'd turn it round and then lead the pony.
And then put the pony, put the traces back on, harness back onto the trap.
Did you go picnicking in O'Neill's Road just to...
Because it was a nice
spot.
Quiet. Nothing passed us, never, when we were there. Not a tinker or a man on a horse, nothing ever went past.
Nobody living up there then?
No, no.
I presume it was farming land, was it?
Yes, it was all grazing land and just an odd house.
What was Beaconsfield town like itself? Just as...
Very small. There were a few shops down the street towards the station.
Wood Street,
yes.
There was a post office?
A post office one side, and Adamson's shop, they sold things for builders and
hardware,
general hardware store. And then opposite to that was a butcher's shop, and on the corner was a grocery shop. That's all.
Not many people resident.
No.
And the hotel, of course. The hotel.
Oh, yes, my hotel.
Was the hotel there when you came to live here?
Yes. And that was a very old hotel, very, very old.
Well, that was
for years and years.
Bowman's Inn, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it must have been remodeled at some stage.
I don't know. Whenever we went past, there were usually a couple of old drunks sitting outside.
Yeah. Sunning themselves.
Yeah.
Well, that was the Prince's Highway then.
Yes, after 1920, when the Prince of Wales came over, it was called Prince's Highway.
Oh.
Before that, from Berwick, we used to call it the Melbourne Road, from the hotel stretching on towards Melbourne, was always the Melbourne Road, until it got to Dandenong, the other side of Dandenong.
And then what was it called?
I think it was Dandenong Road.
And what was it called from Beaconsfield?
I don't know. That's the Gippsland Road. Probably.
Yeah, probably was. It wasn't a made road, it was just
it was just very rough cobbles and big lumps of metal and potholes in it, and then the potholes would be filled up with some metal.
Metal and dust road. Yeah. Metal and dirt road. Well,
there were men always from the shire that they used to see that all the rags were kept in as fairly decent order as much as they could with a pick and shovel, and they were called 8 bob a day men. They got 8 shillings a day, and they worked on Saturday mornings, which would be 7 4s of 28 and 4 32, 7 8s of 56. And
yes, and were they casual? Casual workers, or were they employed full time?
So they
worked all day for 8 shillings.
5 days a week, 5 8s of 40.
40, that's £4.
No, that's
half a day.
£2. 20 shillings in a pound.
Bigger pound.
£2 and half day, 4 shillings. £2 for a week. That was a wage for a man, his wife, and 2 children. They worked hard. And
where did they live, those men?
Just round about. See, the little boy, Alan Anderson's father, lived round the corner from this fat school then, in Pill Street. So he was there. He was one of them regularly. And if it was wet and they couldn't work, they didn't get any money. Now, if it was pouring rain, they couldn't do the work. They couldn't get any money that day. So it was very hard.
Were there many sort of casual labourers about? Were there many people?
No, not really. Not until the Depression years later.
Oh, yes, and then you would have seen them then.
Yes.
Yes.
Most people had a cow in the backyard and a vegetable patch and managed to eke out their money like that. They had children too.
There was no child endowment.
No, nothing like that. No help.
At Beaconsfield, was there not a children's home?
Yes, there was a foundling home over the railway line.
Was that a branch of?
Berry Street Foundling Home. It was a branch of the government, Berry Street Foundling Home. And they would have beautiful babies and quite a number, about 20 or 25. Little babies and up to just about walking.
Were they not children who were orphaned? They were
mostly they were children belonging to unmarried young mothers. And they kept the mothers there till the baby was 6 months old, and then the young mother was offered to put it out for adoption, or if not, boarding out, which the government paid some foster mother to mind it.
And while the young mother went off and got some work somewhere.
Yes, and some of them then collected the child later. They got married, and not very many, but some did. And some were so young, and women were so young, only about 14, that they decided to put it up for adoption, and they were beautiful babies for adoption.
Who was running this and what staff
the
was?
The government had paid 2 trained sisters that were there always, and then they also trained young mothercraft girls if they wanted to do it, and then they had the young mothers of the babies that were there for 6 months, and they had a paid cook and a man in the yard, and they had a couple of cows, and the man minded them, and the young mothers did the work.
Was there any fundraising done locally on their behalf?
Later there was an auxiliary, quite a lot later, you know, after 1930 there was. And
when did that home close?
It was there all the war years. And they had older children in there that hadn't been taken, I think, hadn't been boarded out or adopted. And they came from Berry Street, and they had little children from about 5 until they were about 8, something. quite a number, about 10 of them, boys and girls. And they went to, when they got over five, they went to the state school of Beaconsfield.
And you went visiting the sisters in charge?
Yes, we got friendly with them, and sometimes we'd, my cousin and I would drive down, she'd make a sponge cake, and I used to go and look at the babies, and one of the sisters would come and lift one of them out, and I'd sit on the edge of the veranda and hold it. The babies seemed pleased to see us, and the sisters seemed pleased to see us. They were lonely, that they hadn't any cars or any way of getting out. They just stayed there. Yes.
And the children wouldn't see too many people. They couldn't have too much cuddling, could they?
No. And they were very friendly, the babies. As soon as you walked in, they would stand up in the cot if they could and stretch their arms out, much as they take me. Take me.
What part of Beaconsfield was this?
Over the road, along, went along Wood Street and turned about half a block down, and there were railway gates, and you went over the railway line, and the house that they had, the gates of the house were there, right on the side of the railway track, and you drove up in about quite a, I suppose, a few chains, and then this house was an old house with a veranda around, a wooden house with a veranda around. And there was a large stable, which they had as a nursery, with equipment in it and little chairs for the little toddlers to sit in.
Separated from the main house?
Yes, it had been a very big stable, I think, in the early days, but it was lined and fixed up as a comfortable, like a day nursery for these little things. And then a lot of them was in one of the front rooms of the main building, in cots, and the little ones, the younger ones. The two, the ones that are over a year sat in the nursery, in the stable part. But the little ones.
Was it hard to get a child adopted in those days? Was it hard to get a family?
Not before the Depression. The first time I saw them up there was a beautiful little boy called Albert, and he'd been a twin, and someone had adopted the other twin. But they had promised to keep the twins in touch if anyone took the next one. And when I went up the next time, someone had taken Albert, adopted him.
And how old were they then?
About 6 or 8 months old, Albert was.
Goodness.
He was like a big baby, but he wasn't walking.
Yes.
Beautiful, fair baby. And they said the other one was just the same. They were identical boy twins.
I wonder what their history was.
I don't know. And of course they would now be over 70. Yeah.
Well, that home was an annex of the Melbourne home, I suppose, because the Berry Street didn't have room for all the children.
Yes, and this was a country place, and they thought it was healthy for the babies and the children. And the young mothers there, that they kept till the baby was 6 months old and weaned, they were paid a little bit of money to do the work, about 3 shillings a week, I think they said. And, you know, they're only young, untrained people.
And then if the baby wasn't adopted by the time it was 6 months old, what happened? It was kept there, and the mothers then had to go and get some employment.
Yes, and then they were either put up for adoption if the mother wanted it, or boarded out and...
Like fostered out.
They called it boarded out.
Yeah.
And the foster mother got 10 shillings a week for each child that she took. And she got 6 shillings to keep it. Clothe it and feed it.
Mm. Little children.
Yeah.
Well, there's a waiting list for children to be adopted today, isn't it?
Yes. And of course, those days, anyone could take them. I wanted my father to take one. But he thought I was enough worry to have had.
You wanted a baby yourself.
Yes. People asked if they could possibly take one and adopt it and look after it and see that it had a good education. me. Yeah. Mm. Of course, there was no help for the young mothers. Often when I used to go up, and I was only a child myself, and I'd see these young girls, and I'd think, how dreadful if you were asked to give away your baby. But they had no money. They were much better now, really.
Oh, well, they have...
For the mothers, and
you... Yes, yeah. Support for themselves.
Yeah. Mm.
While we were on Beaconsfield, was there not a murder at Beaconsfield in your day?
Yes, there was. In 1920, the only other time I went collecting peace from the time I lost my puppy was in 1920 when I went gathering heath, and my cousin had her mother over from New South Wales who'd never seen heath growing, and we went up to Cromby Road, and a nice elderly gentleman with a long white beard named Mr. Sheard opened a gate and let us go in and collect heath. And there was a little cottage in the corner of the paddock. And that night, he and his wife were murdered. They never found out who did it or why, and the house, little cottage, was wrecked, the floor covering, the floorboards were pulled up, and they were looking for money or whatever. And nobody...
Oh, terrible.
They never found out who did it.
Who found the bodies?
I don't know, but it gave me nightmares for weeks. And then some time after, a few days later at the school, when we were having playtime at 3:15, the funeral went past, and the coffin of the old lady was in the hearse, and the old gentleman's coffin was in the mourning coach. It went slowly past the school, which there was attention while it went up.
Horse drawn?
Yes.
And all your children stood at attention?
Yes.
And anybody in the street stood still when a funeral went past?
The gentlemen would remove their hats, and the boys their caps, or hats, whatever they had on. It would stand at attention while it went by.
What did they do with the bodies when they first found them?
I think they must have taken them down to the morgue. No.
The local policeman?
The local policeman probably took them to the morgue.
Were there any other local tragedies in your youth?
No, I didn't say no. It was very, very rare to have anything like that happen in quiet country Bury.
They never found a motive for that murder?
No, the only thing they could think of, they were English old elderly couple, and they thought they were going back to England. I don't know if for good or for a holiday, and perhaps they had the money for their fares in the cottage, and somebody might have thought they'd get a bit of money. Whether they did, then nobody knew, because nobody, they'd just lived there quietly for some years. I think they were minding, the man was minding some property for some landowner, and it was this little cottage on the corner of the paddock, surrounded by trees and a fence.
Wasn't there a tragedy, this is earlier than your time, when a child was lost in the bush,
yes,
just north of Harkaway?
Yes, but on a picnic. A little boy about 9, and his family went on a picnic, and he rode a pony, and they went in a trap with other horses, and he rode his pony there, and when they got to the picnic park ground, he wasn't there. And they never saw him again, and the pony came back the next day riderless. The only thing they could think of was he might have fallen down some unused mines, gold mining shafts that people hadn't filled in or put a cover over it or anything. Perhaps he fell down one of those.
Was that Mr. Zirko's son?
Yeah.
Or
was
it his son himself?
Mm.
That was very sad,
very
wasn't
sad.
It?
Yes, dreadful. They never got over it.
No.
Because they didn't know what had happened.
Yes.
The only thing they could think of was that, because it was quiet, nobody would murder. Well, there was no body found if they had been.
We were at when we first started this talk, we were near to Anzac Day. How did your school and the children commemorate Anzac Day?
Well, we always had a little service down at the Soldiers Memorial at the end of the street opposite the hotel, that obelisk there. They called it the Fallen Soldiers Memorial in the old days. And the school children would march down there.
The whole school?
The whole school. And my cousin always made a wreath with white and red flowers, roses and geraniums and white daisies. And the senior boy and girl in the school took the wreath between them and laid it on the side of the monument. There were other wreaths there too from people that had lost it.
And did any of the did the local clergymen take part in this?
Yes, the local clergyman and the shire councillor and various local members, and they had a little service and sang a hymn, and they had the flag raised and saluted the flag, and the children said their little thing about the flag. And then we went back to school.
Tell me a bit about the school when you first started. What was the number of your school?
It was number 40. That was